The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Technology. Hi, I'm Don Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. And joining me today on the panel are Thomas Inhero. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Dom. How's it going?
Good. And Father Michael Gossett. Hi, Father Michael.
Hey, Dom. It's good to be back.
I want to jump right into our first topic today. We're talking about, and Thomas, I know this one's near and dear to your heart. It's the end of Google Plus.
It's the end. It's so sad.
Last fall, Google announced that it would be closing Google Plus. And the announcement came as they also announced that they had a big data breach, big security breach related to that. And so they basically said, well, if it's broken, we're not going to bother fixing it. We're just going to shut it down sometime in the spring. And so that's coming.
It's been the redheaded stepchild for a long time, apparently. Yeah.
I think all of us have been on Google Plus. Were you on Google Plus, Father Michael?
I had to look when I saw that this was our topic, but yes, at one point I was on Google Plus.
I was using it big early on. I connected it to various workplaces, my employers. Set up Google Plus sites for them. I set up all my circles. I mean, it was, and I got into it. And then I just kind of faded away. they changed it a few times, and it became less useful to me over time. But Thomas, you were big into Google Plus right up to now. What was it about Google Plus that was attractive to you?
I really think that it was just the fact that it was an alternative to Facebook. I had been getting tired of all of the junk that was coming through on Facebook, and I jumped over to Google Plus, and I really just met a lot of great people. So it was mostly the people that were there and the people that I met along the way. And I think a lot of it, too, was Facebook was more of my people that I knew in real life kind of thing. And then Google Plus ended up being all the other people that I met online, and how interesting it was to have people who were friends that I never actually have met in person, even to this day.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, isn't it, to any social network, is do you find a community of people who are that you want to connect with? that's the question. Is the key to whether a social network works is, are there people there that you're connecting with that you want to talk to, be around with, and it's at some point you have to say, does it matter if everybody is there, if at least the people I want to talk to are there,
right? Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt about it. I mean, I know you're talking with Father Corey on the other days of this podcast, and he's one of the guys that I met on Google Plus and ended up meeting at one of the conferences that we were at. And yeah, it's about the people. That's the great thing about the social networking, is that it is about people. It's not about just the platform itself.
Father Michael, I know you're on a bunch of different social networks, and you said you've been on Google Plus in the past. What is it you're looking for when you're in these social networks? Some people are there to talk to the people they know. Some people there are to sip from the great stream of consciousness of society that just pours through these networks. What is it that you're looking for, and what networks do you kind of prefer with that?
Yeah, I mean, I got on Facebook right when it became available out of college, and then Twitter and Instagram as they've come up since then. But kind of just like Thomas said, there's that mix. What's the balance between it being a place where you share things with people you already know that you see in real life, family and friends and classmates and stuff like that, versus like the beauty of the internet that you're going to interact with people from all over that you've never met in person, is an amazing thing. And I would think you guys, you can tell me what you think. Facebook is worse now that every single person in the world is on it. And it was a really nice, it was a great place. I enjoyed it a lot in its my early days with it, that it was kind of a mix of people you knew, but it was limited. And Twitter was, I think, really beautiful. I still really enjoy Twitter, but just the idea that you could, it was this big pool, like you said, a pool of people, a constant stream. And I, like you said, Thomas, I've made friends there. There's a priest from Louisiana who we've never met in person. He recognized me at the March for Life because of Twitter and all those thousands of people. And that's the beauty of social media. But I feel like this, all of them have sort of become, they're too much. It's easy to get lost in. And there's just so much sort of advertising and propaganda that it's not the beautiful thing that we all kind of fell in love with.
Yeah, for me, I was going to say, for me, it was, I don't find Facebook to have become, you know, here comes everybody as much because I have to friend people to see their stuff. And I'm not super selective, because I know some people, they only friend people they know in real life. I mean, I'll friend people, but I check their profile out and I look at what they're writing. And if, you know, if I don't like what I see, I don't accept the friend request, and I don't feel bad about it. You know, it's because it's my time and attention is a currency, and I'm only willing to pay out to so many people. And for me, Twitter is the one that's disappointing to me, because that really does feel like everybody, because it is like anybody can see your stuff and will comment on it. And because they can comment anonymously, I know people can be anonymous, like on Facebook, it tends to devalue the conversation. And I know we're talking about Google Plus, to sort of steer it back around there. Google Plus always felt like a smaller pool to me, like a closer knit community of the people literally in your circles. That's and the circles was, I think, in some ways, both Google Plus's pro and its con. It was kind of hard to get your mind around, so to speak. Sorry, no pun intended.
Going circles theme there.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of hard to get your mind around the idea of what do I mean by these circles? And eventually, for me, they just kind of became the way I grouped friends, and then eventually just I only followed the big circle of everybody, and that was that. But what do you, I mean? So when it came, you know, when it comes down to it, for me, part of it was how much I got to remember to go to the places that they don't come to me, and I just couldn't remember to keep going back to Google Plus. You know, my wife's on Facebook, and even Twitter is hard for me to get to these days.
Was there ever a Google Plus app for iOS and Android?
There was.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
It wasn't very good. Okay. Yeah, right. It wasn't very good, but it was there. And I, you know, for me, I think the thing that drew me in was they had a little when you signed into Google generally. So if you went into Google search, they had a little button up in the top right corner that said how many new messages you had from Google Plus as well.
Right.
And I have left Google as my homepage for ages. So that to me was the big draw to go back to it and keep rechecking it. But you're right. If you don't have the little notification bar, it will just fall off. I think I'm signed up for two or three others that I get emails from every once in a while that someone's commented on a post that I made 3 or 4 years ago. I'm like, oh, okay, really? I forgot about that.
Well, and that's the thing is, I mean, I have tried so many social networks. Do you guys remember Plurk? Oh my gosh.
I had heard of it. Yeah.
Oh, missed that one.
Plurk was so quirky, so weird. It was unlike anything that exists today. In some ways, that's kind of cool, nice that it was there. In fact, some of the people I'm friends with now on other social networks, I first friended there on Plurk. But, you know, Plurk, Elo, what was it? App.net was that one? And now, you know, Mastodon, and now MeWe. And you have all these, not to mention the Catholic ones, which just always... They never seemed to be as good. They seem, you know what I mean? They just, and there was never anybody there. So there was never any reason to stay around, you know?
And that sounds like the Catholic internet, Dom.
Yes. Right. Well, I mean, and that's the thing is the Catholic internet, we don't need a Catholic ghetto because there are Catholics on all these social networks. But but I feel like, you know, every time another one of these guys comes around, you know, they try real hard and people get excited about them. But in the end, we're back to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. What do you think? Will we ever have something more than Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? I mean, Facebook has treated its users terribly. Twitter has treated its users terribly, but that's where we still go because no one's come up with something better. Do you think we're ever going to get to something better?
I'd like to think MeWe's getting there. It's one of the main pushes that they have is that your data is yours. And so they're very upfront about any advertising that they're doing or anything that they are trying to push for on the platform itself. And their concept is based around that kind of people moving away from Facebook, people moving away now from Google Plus. And they even developed an app to take all of your Google Plus data and transfer it over to MeWe. So if you're a person that was there, you can get it really easily, all your contacts and everything, and just pull them straight across.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess one of the big problems is, people like you, like us, who listen to tech podcasts or make tech podcasts, we're willing to do these things. But my 82-year-old mom isn't gonna switch from Facebook. You know, I mean, that's your 90%. Yeah. And sometimes, I don't mean this about my mom, but I think maybe about everybody else. Sometimes that's a feature, not a bug. Like if 90% of the people who are using these social networks don't come over, maybe that's okay. You know, it's nice to have a little quiet little corner. Although there is talk about, the danger of setting up echo chambers of just the people who think and talk like us. So there is some danger of that. And I don't want to fall on that. But it seems so hard now. I mean, we've become so entrenched in these networks. Like MySpace was the thing for a while, but then eventually went away. And you think, maybe the same thing could happen to Facebook. But unless something, I feel like my opinion is unless something external, like a government regulation or something like that, or a major criminal thing happens that shuts them down from outside, I don't see Facebook being supplanted by somebody. And Twitter, I mean, unless Twitter goes under financially, you know, they're always seem to be struggling a little bit. I don't think I see anything replacing Twitter. I mean, they have become part of the communication lexicon of our society. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think the only way I see that it would shift is because like kids aren't on Facebook.
Right.
They may have like teenagers, the high schoolers where I'm the chaplain, they may have a Facebook page, but it's not something they really use. That's what their parents use.
Right.
And so I could see that shift come, and it may take years where it sort of ages away, just like MySpace, that once the people kind of went off into the next thing, it just kind of died. And you look at things like LiveJournal and stuff like that, once that age group moved on, it was kind of dead. And I could see that with Facebook. They will probably desperately try to come up with something that, and they've done it with Instagram, that hooks a younger demographic, but kids just aren't into Facebook. And that may be our deliverance at some point.
Well, and I think I think it's a good thing to have that, because it makes, you know, and the kids end up having to defend themselves. They say, "Mom, Dad, I don't want to get on Facebook because they're not secure. They don't, you know," and so they have to come up with a reason, and the reason can't just be it's not cool, you know, that and so. But it's really interesting to see what they are flocking to, things like Instagram, which mm-hmm. Facebook was very smart in having bought because they realized that was where the demographic was going. And then things like Snapchat, too, where there's this feeling of kind of like that temporal movement of information. You know, I send a piece of information, it's there for a limited time and then it disappears. And that feeling that they have in that kind of moment is really interesting. Because, you know, like I said, there's some of these other sites that I have not posted anything. I haven't even logged on for years.
Right.
And I'm still getting comments from
them. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've told the younger generation so often, nothing ever dies on the internet. Everything, whatever you post will live forever. And so they sought out a network where the feature is it doesn't live forever. It lasts for 24 hours. But I hate to tell you, kids, it even though they tell you it's gone, it's not. It's still on a server somewhere.
Still lives forever. Yeah.
So,
and I think we also use so many of them too. We've all gotten to the point where, you know, the ones we go back to are those central ones where we know everybody is, but we still branch out and go to other marketplaces as well. You know, Facebook is where we know everybody is, but then we'll go out and go to MeWe and go to Snapchat or to Instagram, and we'll find the one that fits our kind of flavor and go to it as well.
The trick is getting enough of your social network, personal social network, to go there too in order to continue connecting with people, unless you're the type of person who's going to find new people to connect with as well. That's the that's the big thing. As we talk about the end of Google Plus, I think we should probably, you know, talk a little bit about Google's tendency to shut down products without warning. I remember one of the things that really did, there were two things I think that really suppressed the importance of blogs. Blogs were huge from about 2002 to 2010, around there, on a mass level. I mean, the big blogs are still around, but a lot of the people I used to blog with within a Catholic community don't blog at all or don't blog as much. And I think two things did that. One was the rise of social media, that which gave an outlet that people were using blogs for. But two was the loss of Google Reader, which made it easy for people who followed blogs to continue to follow along. And now RSS readers are still there, and you have Feedly, and you have other ones. But Google Reader was the one. And then, you know, so, but they shut that down with sort of without warning. Or they would, well, that's not fair. They shut it down with a little warning, but they kind of just shut it down. Google Wave, which was supposed to be the big thing, and sort of became Google Docs, but that was a huge thing for a while. But Google has gotten this reputation as a company that creates products, gets people to love them and use them, and then shuts them down. Are we foolish to depend on Google's products anymore? Should we, you know, should we kind of take an attitude of, if I'm not paying for it out of my pocket, I should assume it's going away?
I'll be honest with you. I tell people to stray away from Google products, generally speaking, if they're going to rely on them for anything. So a really big push in education right now is to have like classroom devices that are all interconnected.
Right.
And Google is huge in that space with between Docs and then Google Classroom and all of these things they have. I recommend people leave them because, you know, it seems like they are almost that child that picks up a toy, gets really excited about it, shares it with everyone, and then just tosses it aside and walks on to the next thing.
Right. How about your father?
It's scary because, I mean, between Apple and Google, for me, I rely on them for so much of the data. And my pick the first time I was on this podcast was Google Photos. Everything's in there. Every single picture I've ever digitally taken is in that. And if that just went away one day, I like the phrase they use, they sunset it.
yeah.
It implies something beautiful and majestic. Like, no, all your stuff is gone. It is sort of a deal with the devil that we make in a lot of ways with these services, if you're not using multiple ones to back things up and to not be totally invested in any one thing, it's probably the smartest thing to do.
I'd love to have a conversation someday about how, but Catholic nonprofits and parishes and dioceses, the considerations we should take when getting involved with free to nonprofit, especially tech products. I've dealt with that over the years, and even run into some cases where, you know, we give our product free to nonprofits. Oh, but you're a religious group? No. In cases like that. So there's an interesting conversation along those lines at some point that I'd love to revisit. But let's move on to our second segment, our second topic, which is having to do with the consolidation. Well, it's actually somewhat similar. The consolidation of consumer tech into the hands of a couple of companies, a handful of companies. It was announced, Amazon announced last week that it was buying Eero, which is the new big popular consumer mesh networking company. Before that, they bought Ring, the internet connected doorbell and security company. They also bought Whole Foods, which is not a tech company per se, but that's just another part of that. A few years ago, Google bought Nest, and then they bought Dropcam, and all of these were products that were in general use, lots of customers. They were innovative. People loved them. They were small, scrappy startups. There's a quote from our article in The Verge that I'll link in the show notes, and I wanted to kind of read that kind of frames some of the ideas in this. Is, he says he has consternation, has experienced consternation when he hears the story about Amazon buying Eero. He says, specifically, that an independent company was once again snapped up by one of the big tech giants. We all feel trapped or maybe captured by the various ecosystems we live in. I think he means Apple, Amazon, Google, you know, that sort of stuff. We all use excellent products every day made by behemoth companies, but increasingly only made by those companies. iPhone or Android, Chrome or Safari, Surface or Mac, Windows or Chrome OS, or even Facebook and Twitter, as we were just talking about, all in one way or another come from one of the big guys. Eero was different. It was a tiny little company that made a great little product, something simple, elegant, reliable. Would it have been too much to ask that it stay independent? So consolidation, you know, how do you feel about this? How do you, what should folks be thinking about? You know, should they trust their Eeros, their Rings? Should we worried that Amazon owns these things? What do you guys think? Thomas, maybe you can go first.
Yeah. No, if you've ever met an entrepreneur that that starts these companies, you know that they definitely are not in it for the long haul or in it for the they're in it for the excitement. They want the excitement, right, of starting the thing up. And I think there's a way to look at that nefariously and say, well, they're just in it for the money. But that's not what these guys are. A lot of them don't even really care about the money. And you can give them the $1 million that's going to go for that startup, and they're still going to go out and do more startups because,
right,
that's what they like, is that excitement of something new, innovative, and on the edge. And then once that thing's not new, innovative, and on the edge anymore, they're going to move on to something else.
There's also an element where these companies, I mean, when you look at a company that is bleeding money, it's taking venture capital in and just spending it with no profit in sight. Those venture capitalists are not just giving their money away. And they're not going to turn into a giant profitable company overnight. There, a lot of these VCs, not the entrepreneurs themselves necessarily, but the VCs, they're looking to get acquired, just right, like Eero did, so that they can get their money back. They're in it to invest, to make money. And so there's a little of that as well. I mean, we have to expect that. Father Michael, what do you think? I mean, is this something the average consumer needs to worry about when we, you know, should we look at these products, and should someone think about, you know, if they're a little wary of Amazon, should they not buy an Eero or Ring, or should they only look for independence? What do you think?
I think the scary part is that suddenly the thing you bought and maybe that you love just isn't going to work anymore because it's now it's part of this bigger system. The thing that jumped to mind when I read this was workflows going into shortcuts in
iOS.
The new iOS. I never use workflows. But I've played around with shortcuts. And so I guess it can be done well. And for the people that made that app and all these sort of things, I'm sure they're happy with the money that they were given and maybe even participating in. So it could be done well but it's kind of sad. I keep going back to Tweetbot is my favorite Twitter app. It's just like a great one. You can still see your tweets in chronological order, like God intended. And,
exactly.
And Twitter is squeezing the life out of it, is restricting more and more,
right,
what you can do. And you just see that if you don't play ball and you don't fit in that model of build a thing and then let the company buy it, it's very easy to get just choked away. And it is kind of sad. And like we mentioned in kind of the last segment, if they decide, well, we're just not interested in this anymore, then that service is gone.
You know, actually, Twitter's a good example because what the first great Twitter app was, it was an app called Tweety by Lauren Brichter. It was so good, and it was early on the iPhone, that he invented some of the things we take for granted on the iPhone, like pull down to refresh was a UI that he invented. So it was a great app. Twitter acquired it and then ruined it. It's like a terrible app now. You see that, and that's what people I think worry about is, you know, like I had a Ring doorbell when it was still Ring, and I was like, I can't wait till they finally get around to making integrate with HomeKit, Apple HomeKit, so that I can integrate it with my HomeKit stuff. And, you know, they kept saying, oh, it's coming. Oh, we're working on, oh, it's coming. And then they got acquired by Amazon and not a word. And Amazon stuff just doesn't, they have not ever made it a priority with any of their stuff to make it work with HomeKit. Right. Although I have to admit the Echoes are okay in that regard. And they've been getting better. But it's just this thing where you feel a little betrayed by this product that you invested not just money, but also time in. And when you make it part of your house, it's your home. I have Nest thermostat and I have Nest Protect smoke detectors. I don't do cameras inside the house. That's my line that I draw. But I have the Ring doorbell and the Ring cameras outside. I still actually have an AirPort, Apple AirPort. So I've looked at mesh systems, but I'm not in the market for one yet. But as these things kind of all end up in house at these big companies, the FANG, as they say, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, mm-hmm. Netflix, and Google, the big five, you know, consolidate more, it makes me worry that too much is in too few hands.
I think the big worry, too, is the fact that with digital, you have to update. You know, you can't say, well, I have this favorite thing that I'm going to keep. Because I have an example. I thought immediately of an example that I have of real life. This kind of thing happening. I bought a guitar when I was in college. I didn't really know much about what I was buying at the time, but it was a tiny little company called Tacoma that made these fantastic guitars that had this offset hole in it that looked just really, really slick. It was bought by Fender and buried. The company was just destroyed when Fender bought it. And that was because Fender could afford to, and they were making a really challenging product that Fender didn't want to compete against. And they said, we're done. And so now anytime I go anywhere, you know, I'm playing this guitar, I love it. And everybody's like, oh, that's a really cool looking guitar. And I finally had a guy come up to me the other night who knows something about guitars. And he's like, oh, that's a Tacoma. Is it pre-Fender? And I'm like, yeah, it is. How did you know? And so we got this great conversation about it. But you couldn't do that with tech, because as soon as the tech gets bought out, it becomes obsolete and you can't use it anymore. It's not safe or it's not going to keep updates. So, yeah.
Father, you were going to say something.
It's kind of along those lines that a little company like that can be creative in a way that big companies are often afraid to.
Right.
And when somebody has a good idea and they work on it and they build their life around it, they can do a lot more. And in a lot of ways, it's better and easier for us when those things are absorbed into the systems we already have. But it is just kind of, it's a sad thing that the whole system is set up that you can't exist like that.
Right.
For very long, right. And either because they want your idea or they don't want to compete with your idea, you can't last.
That's almost worse when it's not that they want to acquire it and integrate it. It's when they don't like your competition and they're acquiring you to shut you down. You know, an example of another, you know, that's actually even closer to home of acquiring, shutting down, and consumers getting left in the lurch. A few years ago, there was a company called Revolve that made a $200 or more smart home hub that lots of people bought, they loved. Google acquired them and then shut them down and turned off the servers, which made the hub work because it was cloud-based. And those $200 devices, they didn't just not get upgraded anymore. They died. They were useless at that point.
Right.
And that's the sort of thing that I think people are afraid of. Amazon has a pretty good track record so far. Ring is still an independent company. They're operating it on its own. They said Eero will still be, but, you know, I think it's the sort of thing that consumers get wary of. And, you know, and these big companies better be a little wary of turning off consumers in that way, I think.
Yeah. And you also have to worry about, you know, what their return on investment is. They might not be. You know, they might let the company continue to operate, but where's the information going?
Right. Especially on something like a networking device, all of the traffic that goes, everything you do on the internet is going over that router owned by Amazon, you know, and connected to their servers. And they can do a whole lot of market research based on that. Just like that's one of the reasons why people got a little weirded out by Amazon Key. The idea of that the delivery guy could actually come into your home and leave the package inside. It sounds great. I don't like getting my package stolen off my porch, but gosh, some stranger being able to come into my home. On the other hand, I have a device sitting 3 feet from me that can listen to every word I say.
I was going to say, you said you have an Echo, right?
Yes. So
stranger's already there.
Yeah. I've made my peace with this idea and I'm not worried about it, but some people might be, and maybe they need to take that into consideration. And everyone's going to make that decision for themselves. That's mm-hmm. a big thing. So, I think that's if it's unless there's anything else on that, I want to move on to our picks of the week, where we every week we go through, each of us comes up with some tech related pick of the week that we want to share with the audience. So, Thomas, why don't you go first with your pick of the week?
Oh, you're going to pick me first. Let Father go first, because okay. I got to grab mine and remember what it was.
Okay, all right. No problem.
I got distracted.
Sure thing. Right.
Father, why don't you go with your pick of the week?
Yeah, my pick was it's toolsandtoys.net. There are a lot of websites like this where they review different products. This one's by Sean Blanc, who's done reviews in the past. But I just find it a really enjoyable one. It's great design of a website. And especially at Christmas time, if I'm looking for a review of something, and they do some really great wish lists with good categories of different things, I usually can find some good things for people that they wouldn't have thought of for themselves. And he has a good mix. It's not just tech things. He'll have books and movies. He'll have websites, random little outdoor stuff. He'll do a little segment on here's like camping sort of products that could be interesting and feature small companies. And I really enjoy that. So toolsandtoys.net is a good place to go.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Sean Blanc, I've enjoyed his other sites that he's done as well. That's pretty cool. Yeah, speaking of companies that have been acquired by others, my general go-to has been the wirecutter.com, which is not my pick this week. I should have saved that for a pick, but I'll make it a pick in the future. But they got acquired by the New York Times recently.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good turn for the New York Times to think about that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, because the Wirecutter makes a lot of money off of the Amazon affiliate links to the products that it picks. That's a discussion for another time.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, good. You go ahead, Thomas.
Okay, so my pick for this week is Mango Languages, which is a language acquisition app, and it's one of my favorites. I tried Duolingo for a long time. I love the concept behind Duolingo, but I like the way that Mango Languages teaches language. And I'm currently learning Chinese, so I've been going through using that. And my favorite part about it is that with my library card, I have access to Mango Languages through my library. So I just put in the library card number, and voila, there you go. I can get right on it.
That's awesome. That's cool. I have tried Duolingo. I feel like Duolingo is great in the beginning, but at a certain point, and relatively early on, frankly, it doesn't work as well with it.
Right.
I'll try Mango Languages. I've also got a review copy of Rosetta Stone that I'm trying out.
Oh, cool.
So I'll come back and let people know what I think about that. So that's a good one, Mango Languages. Mine is a little hardware device that it's speaking of keeping yourself secure against people spying on you. It's called the C-Slide Sliding Webcam Cover. And it's a little black shutter that you put up over your webcam on your computer, on your iPad. I wouldn't put it on your phone because it's too big for that. But on a laptop. And it's just a little shutter that you slide shut when you're not using your webcam. You slide open when you need to use it. And it's just a little thing that means that if anyone ever hacks your webcam, if you ever, accidentally give permission to a website or an app to use it without without realizing it, they won't see anything that they shouldn't see. Get it. They sell family packs. Get a whole bunch, put them on your computers, put them on your kids' computers, especially if you do that thing where you put it in your, you could have a computer in their room. Which I wouldn't, but that's every parent's own decision. We can talk about that one in a future episode.
Sounds like a good idea.
but I recommend these, and they're inexpensive, a few bucks on Amazon. And that's my pick of the week. So I think that's it for us. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Secrets of Technology. Today, we're thanking by name Eric E., Brian S., Michael P., Brian K., and James H. It's through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give. They make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Technology and all the shows we do at sqpn.com. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion of the end of Google Plus, the consolidation of consumer tech, and our picks of the week? Let us know by visiting sqpn.com/technology or the SQPN Facebook page and leave some feedback there on the show, or send us an email to technology@sqpn.com. You can find the links from our episode on our show notes at sqpn.com. Please remember to like each episode of Secrets of Tech on Facebook, retweet it on Twitter where we're at SQPN, leave comments, subscribe. If you haven't yet subscribed, subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app. I like Overcast. A lot of people like Pocket Cast. Or on YouTube, where you should hit the bell to get notifications. And write a review in iTunes. That's a huge way of helping us get the word out about this this show and growing our audience. By the way, if you have an Echo device and you want to listen to this podcast or any podcast, just say, Echo instead of saying a lady's name. Echo, play Secrets of Technology podcast, and it will play the most recent episode for you. You can do that with any podcast, pretty much. So, until next time, Father Michael Gossett, thank you for joining me in sharing the Secrets of Technology.
Thank you so much.
Thomas Inaro, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, I'm Don Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.